Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. I always learn a lot when I talk with the folks from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. It's unfortunate that we have to be such cautious consumers, but it is great to have them along to as a resource to tell us what kinds of scams are going on out there and kind of what to be particularly on the watch for. Sandy Chalmers, one of our guests, is the administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection with the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Sandy, great to have you with us again.
Good morning, Larry.
And Michelle Reinen with us as well. Michelle directs the Bureau of Consumer Protection. And Michelle, thank you for coming by as well.
Well, thanks for having us.
I tell you what, there are there's always scams operating. And now, this time of the year, there are a couple that can rear their ugly heads sometimes every year. And one is what we call the grandparent scams, and that comes up, I'm thinking, because of spring break, and a lot of students are going to be away, Sandy, that this is going to, could be an issue.
Yeah, this is a scam that's been around for a long time, unfortunately, and we still hear from people who have been victimized by this scam. And as you know, what happens is that the phone of an elderly person will ring, probably in the middle of the night, and they'll hear a voice say, "Grandma, I'm in trouble. I need money. Don't tell anybody, but I need $1,500 wired immediately." And they can really make it sound very convincing the kind of thing where you need to take urgent action immediately. And grandparents are vulnerable to that kind of thing, and sometimes the urge to help and protect outweighs that little voice of skepticism that may be speaking at the same time. But we're getting the word out right now because a lot of college kids are on spring break, and it's a good idea to talk about this scam with your elderly relatives, inform your grandparents if you're going on a trip, just keep them informed of your travel plans.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, and we've actually had calls to this program from people who have been victimized or their parents had been victimized. It's really sad.
It happens a lot, and this is a scam that you need to be prepared for when you get the call, because most likely you will get a call sooner or later. It's that prevalent. We were sent a very interesting newscast footage from a TV station in Montreal, Canada. And the Royal Canadian Mounted Police raided a telephone boiler room where people were making these grandparent scam calls. And the chilling part of it to me was that the police found lists of names and phone numbers of elderly people in America. So, you know, it happens a lot.
Well, that's one for people to certainly be on the watch for. And now today, our Wisconsin Badgers are playing North Carolina, and I'm expecting them to be victorious. And I'm hoping that those who have tickets that are real tickets. What do you think, Michelle?
Well, every time one of our home teams keeps proceeding in any kind of tournament situation, we always run into the big risk of those ticket scams. Is your ticket truly legitimate? What was your source for getting it? Did you fall victim? So consumers need to beware if they are trying to get a ticket for potentially next week's games. Mm-hmm. Let's hoping our Badgers are victorious there, that they don't fall to any of the scams on a Craigslist type situation, making sure that they're using official sources for tickets, such as the NCAA.com tickets mm-hmm. website, or you know, a StubHub type, or a legitimate reseller of tickets, as opposed to someone just trying to get rid of theirs, and that they're going through the marketplaces or different things like that. But really being sure that you're using secure websites when purchasing mm-hmm. a ticket, try and use your credit card so maybe you have a safety net there. And if you're buying from an online classified ad, what we advise, even though it's difficult because who knows where the ticket comes from, ask to meet the the person you're buying the ticket from in person at a police station of all places, mm-hmm. because if it's a scam, they're going to back out right away. They won't sell you the ticket. They'll have plenty of reasons why that doesn't work for them. But that puts some legitimacy behind it. You know, ask to see the ticket so you can make sure it's got all the proper logos and everything that it should on it to know that it's a legitimate ticket there. And if you're asked to wire money or use a money pack card of any sorts to pay for that ticket, be extremely skeptical. You know, the credit card would be an appropriate form to receiving money, or a PayPal account if it's an online situation like that.
Yeah.
And always Google or check the Craigslist scam things that are going on, if that's your source, to make sure that you're identifying the seller if there's any history there.
Mm-hmm. And a money pack card is like, sort of like a temporary credit card or something? Or?
Yeah, it's a prepaid debit card, and you can buy them at almost any retailer, yeah. like a Walgreens or Walmart. But there's a code on the back of the card, and you can read that over the phone to somebody, and it allows them to drain the account.
Oh.
So that makes it very attractive to crooks. Payment by that method.
I can see why. Well, Joanne in West Allis has a question about the grandparent scam. Joanne, hi.
Hi. I have a question. I was just wondering how they get their lists, because I don't have any children or grandchildren, but I have nieces, you know, that age, and I don't think I fall for anything like this, but do they just call people at random, or?
How do they find out?
There are a lot of ways to get information. One way is by using a so-called sucker list. And if people have ever responded to a phone call or entered an online contest, that information is usually sold on and can fall into the hands of criminals. But the other thing is, it's amazingly easy to get that kind of information from the internet. And one obvious way for a crook to get that kind of family relationship is from an obituary. And most obituaries are online mm-hmm. now, and it will give you the names of the children and the grandchildren and the nieces and nephews and so on. Mm. Another way is through the use of social media, and so many kids, you know, college-age kids have a public profile, and they will say, I'm headed to South Padre, here I go, and a crook can get that information that way.
There you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. I will invite you to call in as well. Maybe you have a question or maybe an experience to share with our two guests today, Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Ryan and Larry Mueller here. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And when you phone, Judith Sears Poisson answers the phone. And thanks to her again for filling in for me the last couple of days with my cold, which is still hanging around, but at least my voice is here again. I'm not whispering. Oh, well, listen, I tell you what, I mentioned Facebook, and here we have something, a Facebook comment from Tim. Someone I know fell victim to a scam. She was called by someone claiming that they would arrest her for tax fraud unless she paid up immediately. The scammers hacked the phone system of a police department, so the call seemed very believable. They directed her to buy a specific brand of prepaid credit card and give them the number. She lost $1,500, all of her savings at the time. I'm very frustrated by this situation because that card company knows they are being used for fraud. They even know where the money went, but they won't cooperate with police. Why can't this credit card company be held legally responsible for knowingly profiting from fraud? This experience ruined my friend's finances. That's terrible.
It is terrible. I think where we want to start with this one is the education on the IRS imposter scam instead of getting into the legal who's responsible piece of it, because we're not lawyers here. But I mean, this is the IRS imposter scam. And at the beginning of the tax season, we worry about the identity theft and people stealing and filing for your refund. And now that we're into the tax season and going into the summer, is the IRS imposter scam where people are calling you and saying that you owe money on your taxes and you need to pay it, or we're going to come knocking and put you in jail, or all sorts of bad things are going to happen to you. And we just had a story from our department secretary head who met a couple just the other day who they threatened to put them in jail if they didn't pay up on the IRS. So very severe threats where people feel very vulnerable, where they need to wire money or use these money pack cards that we just talked about to pay. But consumers need to be aware that the IRS doesn't make these phone calls. They don't use threatening tactics. If you get a call and you think it's legitimate, you call your local IRS office or you go to the police station even and ask about and file with law enforcement that you're getting these threatening calls. The IRS does not use scare tactics when they are trying to reach you. And they mail you a letter first to say overdue, late payment, you know, whatever it is that you have.
Might be scary when you get the letter, but they're not scary. They're not trying to scare you. That's for
sure. The impact of the letter is never a positive thing.
All right. Paul in Milwaukee has something for us. Paul, hi.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
I got a call from my tax preparer yesterday telling me that when he tried to e-file my federal, that one had already been filed using my social.
Oh.
So the one question, the one comment I would have is, if you get a Green Dot prepaid debit card in the mail and you didn't order it, that pretty much means that someone has filed, because that is how they get it wired to there. They can get it wired to that debit card.
Oh.
And I called Green Dot yesterday, and they said, yep, there was a card. It had money on it. The money was from the IRS.
And it's gone.
Well, no, I actually put a hold on it, so they ain't going to be able to get it. But now I'm going to have to wait to refile my return, and I'm probably going to have to wait 6 months to get my return once they fix all this up.
Oh, well, thanks for calling and for commenting. Let's get some comments from our guest today. Michelle, do you want to?
Well, this is with the last Facebook post that we went over. The start of it is that the identity theft, where people are filing taxes fraudulently, trying to get others' returns and stealing identities. And this was this experience. And so at the end of filing your taxes, if you're owed a refund, you know, your bank accountant will electronically wire it or another form of how you want to receive it. And so they probably obtained an empty or a partially used money pack card and put in that information for it to be deposited into that account. And I know that, and we know from our experience in working with the IRS and the State Department of Revenue, they're trying to put lots of safeguards in place to not give out refunds to people who are fraudulently filing tax returns for the refunds of other individuals. And this gentleman putting a freeze on that wire pack, that money pack, was a great thing. But there are delays, and then he'll probably end up with a PIN number for future filings. And it's so important to file your taxes as early as you can, and do so in a safe manner. If you're going to file in the paper form, go to the post office and mail them. Don't just stick them in your mailbox, making sure if you file online that you have a very secure system to do that. Your computer's up to date. There's the antivirus software and spyware are up to date, and you have a secure Wi-Fi system. You're not filing at Starbucks or something. So there are less areas of intrusion into your personal information. Somehow his must have been obtained to put this filing in.
Oh, that is really too bad. Ellen in Greendale, it's your turn. Hi, Ellen.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was recently notified by Anthem that I was one of the person friends whose information was stolen from a cyber attack, and they have set up a credit security system for people who have been involved in this that we can use. And one of the things you can do is contact any one of the big three credit bureaus, and it will transfer to the other two. But you can either set up a credit fraud alert on your credit report, or you can do a credit freeze. And I've never done this before, and I know that if I do a credit freeze, if I need to access my credit, it can be a little bit of a hassle. So I'm just wondering, what is the better way to go? Should I do just the credit fraud alert, or should I do the freeze?
You may want to do both.
Okay.
I think what they're offering you is some form of credit monitoring program, which you ordinarily would have to pay for. But it's a really convenient way for you as a consumer, because you'll get an email or communication once a month alerting you to whether there's been any activity on your account and whether they believe there's been anything fraudulent going on. But the credit freeze, with the number of data breaches there have been lately involving tens of millions of people, whether you've been a victim or not, you may want to take that step to freeze your credit account. And you're correct that it costs $10 to put the freeze on. But it's an additional level of protection that at this point, with the new data breaches in the news almost every day, you may want to take that extra step.
But then you can't use the cards.
If you want to apply for a line of credit, you'll have to pay $10 to temporarily unfreeze your account. But $10 is a lot cheaper than buying one of those insurance plans or a credit monitoring plan or something like that.
Sure.
Right. And then how long does it take? Like, if let's say I decided I wanted to buy a car and I went for a car loan, how long does it take for that credit freeze to be removed?
3 days. Under the Wisconsin statute and rule, a credit company the credit reporting agencies has 3 days to lift the freeze and do that. So you want to coordinate, but you usually know when you're going in for a big purchase that way. And you work with your banker as well with which reporting agency do they want to get your credit from, so you only have to target your lift. And you work on that, negotiate, because they don't usually need it from all three, maybe two, maybe one, depending upon the purchase level.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks. Great questions. Thanks a lot, Ellen, for calling. Cindy and Nina has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Cindy.
Good morning. Yesterday I received an email from Equifax and regarding your credit score, and I have never been on Equifax, and it's kind of a scary-sounding email that it says something about suspicious activity on your account, and I went and checked both of my bank accounts, and everything seemed fine. It even gave a scan code and the date generated, and, I mean, it says doubtful changes to your score must be checked as soon as possible. This code will expire 3/24/2015. And then today I got another one, this one from FICO Alert. And it says inaccuracies could be present in your credit score.
I get those a lot. Asking me about my credit score, and my credit score may be a problem. But what about these particular ones, Sandy?
There are a lot of emails like that, and these credit bureaus do sell services at a cost. So, but not knowing whether these specific emails are legitimate or not, I mean, that's the problem here. So it sounds like you've done everything right so far. You may want to check your credit report, not just your bank statements. And, you know, you have the right by federal law to view your credit report free of charge three times a year. So you do that by visiting annualcreditreport.com.
Okay.
Or there's also a phone number if you're not comfortable doing that over the internet. It's 1-877-322-8228.
Wait a minute, what's that again?
1-877-322-8228.
Okay.
And that will allow you to check your credit report to see if there has been any suspicious activity.
And, you know, isn't there a way, actually I do this with a pointer on my when you're online or you've gotten an email or you go to someone's site, you can put the pointer on the address, right?
If you get an email and you question whether it's actually from the business that's represented in mm-hmm. the email, you can hover your mouse over any link in the email mm-hmm. and see where it directs to. And usually it looks like a hacked email account of some kind. So, but I'll always be extremely suspicious of any email like that something that you don't expect.
Yeah.
Because it's usually fraudulent.
Yep. There you go, Cindy. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Claudette in Cedarburg, it's your turn. Hi, Claudette.
Good morning. I got an interesting one yesterday from PayPal, saying that my account was being restricted and I should follow this link to see what the problem was. And, of course, then in the link they wanted my social security number. So I called PayPal and said, you know, is this a real issue or not? And, of course, it wasn't.
Yeah.
But I hadn't heard of PayPal. You know, it looked very official.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Perfect example of a fraudulent email. And you can see how easy it would be to fool somebody. I'm sure the email had the PayPal logo, so it looked very official. Yeah. PayPal,
and
it
read like it was, you know, that they had upgraded their service and now I needed to sign up for the new and more wonderful tools they were giving me.
Mm-hmm.
So it was disguised as an advertisement in kind of a way. But
we've just been getting emails that look like they're from our email provider, our internet service provider, saying that we've exceeded the levels on our email inbox and we need to enter our social security in to get that fixed. So, you know, those kinds of fraudulent emails are just everywhere, and you have to be extremely vigilant and skeptical.
Yep, there you go. Thank you, Claudette, for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. The number 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen from the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, visiting about consumer scams. And there are always plenty out there, unfortunately. Dale in Merrill has a comment for us. Hi, Dale. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for the show. A friend of mine had received a phone call, supposedly from his grandson, saying he was in jail, he needed money. And this gentleman, quick enough that he said, in talking, when is your birthday? Did you receive my card? And turned out the person on the other end was about a month and a half off. And then he also asked the person, why didn't you call your mother in Washington, D.C., knowing that his daughter or the boy's mother was not in Washington, D.C., and started getting, you know, answers that just didn't add up. So a couple of questions really quick, and then he was able to realize this is not who it's alleging supposed to be. So,
yeah, there you go. That worked, Michelle.
It did. The only point of caution I'd make, I mean, any system you can work out is excellent. A password system when you know you're traveling, so should something truly happen, you can get help. They'll know it's not a scam. But just being careful not to respond with the positive answers. So you ask your date of birth and then, no, that's not right. It's actually whatever it is, because you don't want to feed these scammers any of your personal information or give them any tips that will put it together where they can then scam you 2-3 months down the road when you forget that you'd gotten a call earlier. So just making sure you don't have that natural instinct to, no, you're wrong. Here's what it is. So,
you know, sometimes you wonder, you think these people that are doing these scams are, a lot of them are pretty smart. If they would just apply themselves to an honest business, they could probably make a lot of money, many of them. But that would be the easy way. That would be the hard way, I guess I should say. Thanks, Dale. Pete in La Crosse, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry, and to the guests. Hey, one thing I find that on scam emails, no matter how official it looks, I'm not looking for their logo. I'm looking for my name, and it's not there because they don't know who I am. You know, they'll send out notifications about all kinds of things, but they don't know my name, and that's my clue that this can automatically go into the delete bin. Because the FBI would know my name if they're going to arrest me. The other thing is, I filed my taxes, took them to the post office 5 weeks ago. Still haven't heard back. Is this to be concerned, or is this a normal turnaround for taxes filed by mail? Or what do I do if this seems to be excessive?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think 5 weeks is anything excessive at all, given it is by paper and they tell you when you're going to file using software that by mail will take longer, weeks longer. But the other thing is if you're ever always concerned, you can make a phone call and ask the officials, make sure you're calling the IRS, make sure you're calling the Department of Revenue, and ask and do a checkup that way.
Okay, and identify myself by name and Social Security number, I take it?
Well, they would ask you the appropriate questions. Once you are confident you've called the right place, you are calling the officials, they'll ask you information, but don't just offer anything ever.
Yep.
Right.
All right, Pete.
Okay.
Good luck. Thanks for calling. 5 weeks, even if you file electronically, sometimes 5 weeks is, let alone by mail, it's going to be longer. Marianne in Caledonia, your turn. Hi, Marianne.
Hi, good morning. If we could go back to the credit freeze topic again.
Yeah.
My husband and I are beginning to put credit freezes on our different accounts. So last month we put it on two accounts. We got a response back from one of the agencies right away, but the other one, we had no record of that going through. We sent it certified. Finally, after 6 weeks, we got the card back. My husband is very concerned that we are sending this information to a P.O. box. How safe are we, using certified mail? Because what they ask you is proof of your identification, so you don't want that information loose out there. You want to be guaranteed it got to the party who needed it.
Yeah. Well, Sandy, what do you think?
That length of time is a little bit concerning,
mm-hmm.
and I wonder if you could call that specific credit reporting bureau and ask about the status.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember which one it was of the three?
Experian.
I would call their toll-free number and just ask about the status.
Do you have it?
I have their number here.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
For Experian, 888-397-3742.
Okay. But do you feel that it's still safe to send it to a P.O. box? All of them offer just a P.O. box number.
Yes, and that's the way they want to receive those requests.
Mm-hmm.
You also may want to file a complaint with our office. That wouldn't be a bad idea, and then we could contact Experian on your behalf.
Mm-hmm.
And you do that by calling 800-422-7128. Or you can file online at datcp.wi.gov.
Very good. Okay, thank you so much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We have Missy at Eau Claire up next. Missy, hi, thank you for calling.
thank you so much for taking my call. My question is, a while back, I paid a credit company to go in, clean up my credit. I was interested in getting a home loan. And when I applied, they said, you know, you have just a few things you need to do, you know, to get your loan and whatnot. And I hired an outside company to do this, you know, do all the legwork, send in, you know, papers and things, whatnot, to get it cleaned up. I paid $500. I'm fine. I just want a car loan and a credit card to build my sister.
And so then, you're breaking up a little bit. Yeah. So what happened?
Oh, am I okay now?
Yes.
Okay. I'm sorry. And everything went fine. And I got a car loan and a credit card to build my credit score. And then soon after that, I started receiving calls for somebody that wasn't me, a girl named Lisa, several calls. And finally, I just said, you know, what is this about? And they told me that she was using my Social Security number. Once you realize that somebody is fraudulently using your information, where do you start? What do you do? I mean, do I go right to the police? Do I go to the credit companies? I don't know where to start.
Okay.
Well, one of the first things you need to do is file a police report, because that entitles you to many other services and information. You need a police report that you have been a victim of identity theft. Then next, you want to run your credit reports, because once you're a victim of identity theft, you get more than your annual free report. You get one as being a victim. And then you need to contact your banks and, you know, whatever's impacted by that. You may need to contact the Social Security Administration to let them know, because you know that it's the use of your Social Security number that's been compromised and stolen. So you want to make sure that the Social Security Administration knows that, and you want to look at your employment history to see if maybe they're using your number that way. That would impact your taxes. You can contact our agency, and we'll send you a brochure and information that helps walk you through, if you're a victim, what is it you need to do.
That would be great.
Yeah, it's 1-800-422-7128. Or go to our website, and under the Office of Privacy Protection, we have a lot of information, and that is datcp.wi.gov.
Oh, excellent. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate it. Those are scary times for a lot of people. That happens, unfortunately. Dana and Madison, your turn. Hi, Dana.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I was a victim of identity theft in the year 2000. Back then, if you remember, we used to receive, well, we still do, our annual Social Security report, which tells us, you know, if you've been working this long, this is how much you'll receive when you retire. And back then, when you received it, it stated on the report your name, your date of birth, and your Social Security number. At one point, I received it, and it had very legibly been opened and then taped back shut. So I knew that something was wrong, and soon after, I received information that someone had used my information to get a credit card and a cell phone. So I did go through the proper channels. I filed a police report and talked with all the credit bureaus, went through all the channels, and found out that the person who had stolen it lived at the place that I had rented before I lived there. And so I was able to find the name. I was able to find all the information about this person, and which I gave to all the people. And I must say that even with that, every year I receive a notification from some form of law office threatening, some sort of suit for me for paying information that is not mine, and I have to go through the whole process again. I have to make copies of the police report, make copies of everything. But and this has definitely been a hassle for me, but I would say that the one thing that is good is that I did at that time put a fraud report on my credit account, which stopped all of the all of that mail that you get with your junk mail that says you can get this credit card for this amount. And so it kind of saved me a lot because I know that a lot of people steal that stuff. And so I don't receive that junk mail. And I also receive a phone call anytime I sign up for a credit card or anytime I sign up for any type of loan. I have to go through extra channels, which is a little bit more of a hassle, but it does make me feel more safe. So for 15 years now, I've been dealing with this. I know where the guy lives. I know his name. I know his address. But I've never, of course, contacted him. And I just wanted to kind of share my story that it does make life more difficult if your identity is stolen. But there is protection, and that's what your guest is helping with. Mm-hmm. And this is not the end of the world. You're not going to lose everything. I've not lost even $1 for this. It's just time that I've had to deal with it. So there, I guess my story can be a success story in the fact that I did do the right thing in making sure, and I do check all my credit reports every year and go through them. I pour through them, and I contact them if there are any discrepancies. And so I would say that it does take a little extra work to protect yourself, but if you are a victim, an unwitting victim, you do still have protection now, thank goodness.
Well, Dana, that's I don't know if it's a wonderful story. You've told it wonderfully. Let's put it that way. Comments from Sandy or Michelle? Sandy?
Well, an unfortunate example of how much time is involved in cleaning up an identity theft crime once it occurs, first of all, and time is money, I think most of us would say. At some point, you may want to consider having another Social Security number issued. That's always an option, and there is some paperwork you have to go through, but it may benefit you in the long run. I think it's really wise that you've had the junk mail stopped. We advise people to consider that. And you do that by going out to this website, optoutprescreen.com. And optoutprescreen is all one word with no hyphens. You can also call a number and be taken off those lists. It's 888-567-8688. And all this information's available on our website at datcp.wi.gov.
There we go. Thank you, Dana. Thanks very much again for sharing your experience. I really appreciate it. And appreciate having Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen with us as well from the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection talking about consumer issues. And thank you for listening here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Join us Friday night at 7 for the Wisconsin Supreme Court Candidate Debate, sponsored by Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television. WPT's Frederica Freiberg and WPR Sean Johnson moderate this debate, featuring the two candidates as they vie for a seat in the state's highest court. That's the Wisconsin Supreme Court Candidate Debate, Friday night at 7 on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thanks so much for listening in on the Ideas Network as we talk consumer scams with our two guests, Michelle Reinen and Sandy Chalmers from the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Join in at 800-642-1234. Love to hear from you. John and Mosinee up next. John, let's see here. Let's get to John. John, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Just wanted to call in and offer a cautionary tale for something that happened to me a couple months back. I got a call from the IRS scammers, and because I always listened to your show, I knew right away that they were scammers and what they were trying to do. They said I owed back taxes. If I didn't pay, they were going to send the sheriff. I knew it was a scam. But I had some time to kill, so I figured, what the heck, I'm just going to call these guys back repeatedly over and over again so they can't call other people and scam them. So I just hit redial, said, hey, it's me. You're not going to scam anybody today because I'm going to tie your phones up. I did this for about an hour. eventually, they blocked my call. So when I called, they said, this caller will no longer receive calls from this number. And I thought, okay, that's the end of the story. I had a little fun with these guys. I'll go to work. About an hour later, I get a call from the sheriff's department. And they say, hey, why are you calling us? You know, are you okay? And I, well, yeah, I'm okay. I'm at work. Turns out this scammer had called the sheriff's department and made it look like it was my cell phone that showed up on their caller ID, saying that I was injured and I needed a welfare check. I had four sheriffs at my house then. They said, well, if this is really you, you need to get back to your house because we got four cops trying to get in to see if you're okay.
Oh, my God.
So my little bit of fun and games with these scammers kind of turned into a little bit of a hassle with local law enforcement. I just explained to them the situation. We all had a good laugh, and they went on their way. But still, you know, it was disconcerting.
It backfired a little bit. So they're mean people.
They're vindictive.
Yeah, they're vindictive.
So, Josh, call and let people know.
Yeah, thank you so much. Appreciate the call and the warning.
We recommend not engaging at all with these people. I guess they can be pretty mean, as he found out. But what it's likely to do is just increase the number of phone calls and emails and fraudulent mail that you receive. So just hang up when you get a call like that.
Eric in Endeavor is up next. Hi, Eric. Thank you for calling.
Hey. Before I ask my question, I wanted, how do I know that this is actually the Larry Mueller show? my question is, last week we got a letter in the mail, my wife and I, saying that they noticed we had just filed our taxes with tax repair, and they wanted to, and because I listened to your show, I learned that they are sending out letters to make you prove your identity. And we got one of those, and I just called my wife after your show started and asked her, did you do that? She goes, yeah. They wanted me to call a phone number, and she explained that it was just a recording that wanted her to leave her name, social security number, date of birth, and then a couple of arbitrary questions about her cars. I don't know how you know that's not. That'd be pretty easy to pull off.
Yeah. I don't know. I wouldn't do it. What do you think, Sandy?
I wish I had the name and number of the office in Washington you call when you have questions about potential IRS scams. I want to say it's an Inspector General of the Treasury or something like that. Maybe next time we're on, or we'll send it to Judith to post on the Facebook page. But that does sound very suspicious to me.
Yeah. Did she leave the information?
Yeah, she did. I just talked to her like 20 minutes ago, and she had left the information on that recording.
Okay.
And I asked her if it was a person or a recording. She said, oh, it was a recording. They just wanted my it didn't sound good to me at all.
No,
but if the IRS is doing that, that's pretty shoddy work for the IRS to be doing that.
Yeah. What do you think, Michelle?
Why don't we do this, Eric? Why don't you call our 800 number and ask to talk to me? I'm obviously not there right now, but leave me a voicemail with your contact information. Because we don't want to take that.
Ready.
We don't want to take that over the air. 1-800-422-7128. Tell them I asked you to leave me a message, and we'll look into that contact number. We'll also contact someone at Department of Revenue who has those IRS contacts, and just make sure, since you left the information, we want to get on top of that right away if you've left it and it's a scam. So
sure. And can you tell me your name again, real quick?
It's Michelle Reinen.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for calling, Eric. Well, yeah, instant help there. Carolyn in La Crosse, hi.
Hi. I received a call last week, and they told me that they needed information from me about the back brace that I had ordered from them that Medicare was going to pay for. And I never ordered anything from them. And I just wonder if that, I see those TV ads that you can get a back brace from Medicare. Well, I have no need for a back brace at all. So I never ordered one.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is a lot of Medicare fraud out there. I would like you to call our hotline number as well, Caroline, and talk to somebody and explain what's happened to you.
And we can, at the very least, get you in touch with the Medicare fraud people to follow up to see whether you're potentially the victim of identity theft. So it could be something as simple as a billing error, or it could be something much more serious, and we'll help you figure that out.
Okay.
1-800-422-7128.
Right.
That's the thank number. You.
Thanks again, and I'll repeat that. 1-800-422-7128. Here's another number. If you have a question or comment for our guest, give us a call at 800-642-1234. Love to hear from you. Anita in Lindenhurst, Illinois. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I have a comment, and then I have a question. My comment is, I hope this helps somebody. I was hacked. The hospital records from 3 years ago were hacked where I had stayed at that time, and they got everything. The hospital was very, very slow. They were given 30 days to notify people. Well, they postdated the letters or predated the letters. But at any rate, you really are on your own. I was appreciating all the advice that you were giving that lady that said, you know, she had identity theft. But what I found out was I got very staunch about sharing my information. And so consequently, when I went to join a health club, I refused to let them take my picture to put in the computer. I told them, you can take my picture and put it in your paper file if you want, but I do not want it where a computer can be hacked. And every single time I say that to someone, I do that with my medical providers, too, because everybody wants to take your picture now. Then it goes into a computer system, which is vulnerable. But they all say, oh, we have really good security. You know.
Yeah.
So what I found out in doing that through the health club was the assistant manager that was helping me, he said he understood perfectly. His parents had been hacked twice. And what the people that had done it were doing was they were using their Medicare and their supplemental insurance to run up medical bills. So when you're contacting all the entities, the credit bureaus, after you've had your identity stolen, you have to also contact Medicare and, separately, Social Security. They are not going to share with each other necessarily. So that's my comment. And my question is this. Just last night, I was going to update my Adobe Flash player, okay, because suddenly I can't, you know, get any YouTube or anything like that unless I do this. So I was reading, like, I don't know, the 5 pages in their terms and agreement and, you know, the number 6 font. And so down under connectivity and privacy, it says that I will acknowledge and agree that under the use of PDF files, when you use the software to open a PDF file that has been enabled to display ads, your computer may connect to a website operated by Adobe, an advertiser, or other third party. Your internet protocol address is sent when this happens. The party hosting the site may use technology to send or serve advertising or other electronic content that appears in or near the open PDF file. And it goes on and on. It says Adobe may not have access to or control over features that a third party may use, and the information practices of third-party websites are not covered by the Adobe online privacy policy. So now I have not hit the submit button because, you know, just in terms of what happened with me, you know, having my hospital records stolen and they got my social and my address and my phone number and all of that stuff, I'm very cautious now. And I've never really read that small print before.
Yeah, and the small print is really, I mean, what they're doing is absolving themselves of any possible contingency that might negatively happen to you. They are not going to be the ones that are going to get sued. Pretty much that's what it is, isn't it, Michelle?
Yeah, it's their privacy announcement that they need to make. And I just want to give a gold star award today for her reading that privacy policy and following it all the way through to the end. But Sometimes you can contradict and counter those privacy policies by setting certain protection levels to very high security on your computer. You know, don't allow third-party cookies, don't allow this to transmit. So you can sometimes combat against those. But you read the policy, you know what you're accepting and will happen if you choose to use that. Computers kind of need the Adobe if you want to go different places, but you now know what will happen and how to defend against it or what to watch out for against. And not enough of us read the privacy policies, and certainly not all the way through. So great job.
Great job. Thanks, Anita. Thank you so much. And really a good message for all of us. A good message for all of us. And Michelle, you've got some other information there to share.
Yeah, Judith got us that information that we needed for Eric on that IRS letter that he received and then left the information on the recording. So I still want him to leave a message if he's still listening. But the tip that we were looking for is if you receive a letter, notice, or form in the paper mail or fax from the IRS, the way that you can verify it is you go to the IRS homepage and search on that letter, that notice, or that form on their page, and then it will give you information because they know that fraudsters often modify their legitimate letters. So you can find information at Understanding Your Notice or Letter by searching it in their site. And then if you have a question about the legitimacy or the instructions on how to submit information, should they say it's legit, they have 1-800-829-1040 to determine its legitimacy. Oh. So they have a nice fancy phone number for us, 1040, that you can call and ask those questions. And that's about a letter. But they have these tips on the IRS webpage if you receive an email you want to check, a phone call you want to check, or a letter, and they break it down in a chart.
So there's usually probably some number connected with the letter. This will be case number, whatever, whatever. And then you go back to their website and this is case number, whatever, whatever.
Right. You'll search it, and they'll have information.
That's a good way to do it, because then you're sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think they know they're a huge target of fraudster, imposter scams, so they try and put information out there for consumers to have confidence with communication.
Well, that's really, really good news and good information to share, and I'm glad we were able to do that. And we probably have... Sure, Judith's already put some sort of link up on our Facebook page as well, or she hasn't, she soon will. Talking today with Sandy Chalmers. Sandy administers the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Michelle Ryan directs the Bureau of Consumer Protection, and they'll be with us right up until 12:30 today. We'll take a look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the IdeasNet, and then we'll be back with our guest. You stay with us. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Lots of calls today for our two guests as we talk consumer scams with Michelle Ryan and Sandy Chalmers from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Maybe you have an experience to share or a question to ask. Join in. Call us at 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You know, Sandy, we've talked about all these scams and so forth, and there are resources. What are the best resources out there for knowing the scams that are currently circulating, other than listening to us?
I think it's a really good idea to have a source that you're following on a regular basis. You can use our website, datcp.wi.gov, and we have a banner on our homepage that says Consumer Alerts. And that is a catalog of the scams that are circulating in Wisconsin. And one of the reasons we ask people to file complaints is that it allows us to connect the dots. And once we see a trend out there, we will alert the media and get the news out to people that way. Mm-hmm. But if you want to follow it on our webpage or our Facebook page at WI Consumer, those are both really good resources for people.
We have Rick in Minocqua with a question. Hi, Rick. Thank you for calling.
Yes, thank you. I got a message on my phone a couple weeks ago from someone claiming to be from the IRS and telling me I owed money and I needed to call them right away. I unfortunately called them back, and I left a message with my name. After that, I got online, Googled the number, found out it was part of the scam and that the IRS only contacts you by writing, et cetera. I haven't heard back from that. The people who called me, I haven't done anything else with that. Does it matter that I left them my name, do you think?
Well, it's better than if you had left your Social Security number, too. But
I didn't leave any other information. Maybe they already had my name before they called me anyway, but I just was wondering if there's anything else I should be doing, or was it enough that I caught it in time? Mm-hmm.
Well, I think what could happen here is that you end up being on a lead list. If so, we call them sometimes, sorry, sucker lists. Mm-hmm. Your information may get resold, and you're going to have to be very cautious about other messages and phone calls you may receive because it might start to compound. You've identified yourself as a live lead now that could be a potential target. So you just want to be very cautious and monitor for that and try not to, you know, engage or answer phones or return phone calls to more, and hopefully it'll then turn around and dampen back down.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. We had earlier, we were, Sandy, I think you gave us optoutprescreen.com as a place for people to go. And Barbara said she called or got a hold of that site, and they're asking for a Social Security number. And that doesn't sound safe to her. And is that correct? Do they ask for that?
They will. Both that website and the annualcreditreport.com website. Anytime you check your credit report on one of those websites, you will be asked for a Social Security number. The alternative is to call the phone number and mm-hmm. do it all by mail. If you, Michelle earlier gave advice on making sure that your Wi-Fi is locked down, that you are on a URL that says HTTPS or SHTTP to make sure you're on a secure connection. But the number, if she'd prefer to go that route, is 888-567-8688.
Well, would you give that once more?
Yeah, the phone number, 1-888-567-8688.
There we go. Carol in Oak Creek, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, thank you. Yes, just a few days ago, I got a strange letter in the mail from My Money Monitor saying that there is money available to me from an insurance account. My father died over 20 years ago, and for a fee, they would recover this money for me. Well, I looked them up online, and they got a very poor rating, and I thought, something's fishy around here. So I called the insurance company directly, and they said it's a bogus letter. There is money left from my father to me, and all I need to do is provide his death certificate to claim the money, and there is no fee charged, you know, to recover this money that he left mm-hmm. for me. So this was a total bogus letter, trying to get a fee to claim this money.
The only good part of that was you found out that you had some money coming. That's one. That's the good side.
Yeah, it kind of makes me sad because, you know, it's not the way you want to get any extra money. But, it looks all official. Please respond within 7 days and have this notarized and everything. But, they're a bogus company. And the insurance company said, no, we did not transfer any money over to this My Money Monitor company out of California.
Good. Excellent. Michelle, comment from you?
Well, you know, this does happen. There are people out there just trolling to find where there's unclaimed funds through state departments, through different states. And you can do unclaimed funds in the state of Wisconsin by calling 608-267-7977 or going to the office of the office of the state treasurer to check for a list to see if there's unclaimed funds in your name there. And that's if you've forgotten about a bank account, or you could then see if your father's name was out there or something. But there are ways to check for yourself for free if there's unclaimed money out there.
There you go. Thank you very much, Carol, for calling. Appreciate it. And that's kind of, and, you know, too, you know, you're sort of reminded, it brings back some probably not the best memories, for sure. Sandra in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Sandra.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
Recovering.
Well, take care. I'm a nurse practitioner. Drink a lot of lemon, hot lemon water.
All right.
All right. I'm calling because I went around Christmas time to get a new cell phone, and they wanted so much information from me. They started with, obviously, my birth date, my car license number, my automobile license number, the last four digits of my credit card number, my credit card number in total, and finally my Social Security number, at which point I said, no, I am not providing that information. Tell me why somebody needs every bit of your personal identification to get a telephone, a cell phone.
Yeah. It's and they have the right to do it, don't they, Sandy?
Yes, they do. Yeah, most of these phone service providers think of it as a utility service because that's what it is, and they are giving you a form of extension of credit. They're entering into a contract with you where you're going to pay regularly, and their means of being able to collect on you should you disappear, leave them high and dry. So they're doing credit checks on you, and they need a means of being able to collect on you as well. So it's like getting a credit card, if you want to think of it that way, where you have to give that information so they can make sure you're a good credit risk in their mindsets is a means of thinking of it.
One thing I would watch for, usually when you're in those little shops buying your cell phone or upgrading or whatever, there are other people in the shop with you, and I happen to witness exactly what Sandra's describing, going through the whole family of five, and they were all handing over their credit card numbers. And if I were a crook, that would have been a great opportunity for me to write down all that information and steal from those people. So insist on some kind of privacy when you're giving that information.
Yeah, or you sit there with your own phone on stenographer and record it all. Then you wouldn't even have to write it down. You just record it on your phone.
Just gave a tip to the fraudsters, Larry.
Oh, yeah. If you see me walking around with my phone. Oh, thanks, Andy. It's too bad, but that's kind of the way it is anymore. Bob in Franklin has something for us. Bob, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hello. I was... are you there?
Yeah.
Oh, good. I was looking into going with a new financial planner, and he gave me the contract, and when I read through it, I saw the last paragraph was arbitration clause. Now, when I got my last charge card, I was able to opt out of arbitration. Can I do that with financial planning?
Not if they don't agree to it. I don't think, Sandy.
Yeah, some companies are under pressure from the Federal Trade Commission to change or give an opt-out option on arbitration clauses. They aren't very favorable to the consumer, which is the concern. You can always try, ask whether you have that option to cross out that section of the contract, but most likely they'll say no. But if you're uncomfortable with that arbitration clause in there, you can always shop around for a financial planner that doesn't require that.
Yep.
Well, I did turn them down. So.
Yeah, you may have done the right thing, Bob. Thanks for calling. Appreciate the call. And good luck looking for a new financial planner. Not a bad idea at all to get a certified financial planner. Robin in Portage up next. Hi, Robin.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Okay, I've got two things if we have time. But the first thing is I keep getting these phone calls from SSI. I originally thought, oh, it must be Social Security insurance. Well, I don't like to answer phone calls that I don't know who in the heck it is calling. But it got so irritating, I finally tried to answer the phone call several times, and it always just, they cut it off. And I talked to no one, no robocall, and SSI always comes up. In fact, I got one this morning, but no phone number. Do you know anything about that?
We've gotten those calls at my house, too, and it could be a lot of different things. You know, you really cannot trust your caller ID. Whoever is on the other end of the phone call can manipulate that to say whatever they want it to say. And it could be, as you said, that it's somebody thinking, if I say SSI, somebody may pick up because they think it's Social Security. It could be that it's a survey company or a fraudulent telemarketer. It could be a lot of different things. Michelle says that it is a telemarketing company or a surveying company.
A survey. When I Google SSI phone scam, then you get back different returns that say that it is a phone scam trying to collect information through the form of a survey information. So, you know, we use this tool quite a bit with different things where we just Google it and put scam behind it to see what pops up from the hundreds of thousands of other people who may have received the call as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There you go.
But the main thing here is to never trust your caller ID. And that's sad to say, but you really have to be extremely skeptical.
And thanks again, Robin. Appreciate the call. You can join us at 800-642-1234. Vivian in Green Bay up next. Hi, Viv.
Hi. I have a question regarding anonymity. My son was recently rear-ended in a car accident, and it was an unlicensed driver in a borrowed, uninsured car.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. So the police report, which both drivers get a copy of, includes name, address, phone number, I believe, license plate number. And I understand he has some means of filing a form to get some restitution through this. But he's afraid to do anything because the other person knows everything about him. And I wondered if there's ever been a movement to make these police reports more anonymous. For instance, maybe identity could be the VIN number on the vehicle instead of someone's personal information.
Well, what do you think?
I'm not aware of any movement that's occurred before. I know police reports, you know, are likely subject to open records of some form, and these were the two parties involved in the incident, and I think they have rights to know the other party that was involved in insurance issues. And I understand that, you know, a borrowed car, no insurance, all of that. But there's still that right to know who you're involved in something with, too. So it's a much bigger issue than a consumer protection issue, and one that, you know, could probably be explored further.
Yeah, hopefully your son's own company is going to help out, insurance company.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But he does have a $1,000 deductible.
Yep.
And, you know, that sort of makes no way for him to collect that from someone else. But the fact that your information is no longer private is a concern.
Yeah, I can definitely understand that. Thank you so much for calling. Seth, who's visiting in Madison from Chicago, has something for us. Hi, Seth.
Hi. Yes, I had two large checks fraudulently cashed on my account back in January, and my bank since then has been investigating, but they have not been very forthcoming about what they've found out. And I've had provisional credits given, taken away, and so far I'm not liable for any of the money. But I was wondering if there's anything else I should do about this issue.
So somebody got a hold of your check number, huh?
Yes, they were fake checks, but they were very close to the original, and the check numbers were also very close to the sequence of checks I had written. But I had the actual check numbers. I had the actual checks with the check numbers in my possession.
Have you filed a police report as well?
I did not. I heard you mention that earlier in the program, and I was wondering if I should have done that also.
Well, I definitely asked the bank, since they're investigating, if they've involved law enforcement. If they haven't yet, then I would make sure that you file a police report. Depending upon where this leads, you may need that tool. And then, you know, other things you can do, we always advise when there's things, if you're not regularly running your credit report, make sure after an incident that looks suspicious that you do run your credit report to see if there's any activity going on there that you need to be concerned with.
Okay, yeah, I didn't do that either, so I will do that.
Yeah, and would you open new accounts with the bank if you're going to stay in the same?
Yes, the bank did freeze and close my accounts, and I reopened new ones.
That's good. That can be a little bit of a pain, too, if you've got money automatically being taken out of your accounts for bills, but... Probably the safest. Thanks, Seth. Thank you very much. And Joan in Waukesha, thank you for calling.
Hi. I have been getting phone calls on my cell phone from my own number. And I Googled it, and I'm assuming it's some kind of a scam. Is there any way I can stop this? They call once or twice a day.
Huh. It looks like it's coming from your own number.
Yes, and when she said earlier not to trust caller ID, does that mean that they can also manipulate the number that they're calling from?
Yes.
Yes, they can. And a few months ago, we had an uptick in complaints from people who said their caller ID number read just two digits different from their own home phone. And of course, you're more likely to pick up when you see a number calling that looks like it's from your neighborhood, your local phone exchange. You may want to try calling your cell phone carrier and see what they say, just to make sure there's no kind of glitch with your phone software. But otherwise, it does sound like you're being spoofed, which is what that caller ID manipulation is called.
Okay,
spoofing.
So just ignore it if they can't change it.
Right.
Okay, all right, thank you.
All right, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Chris recently moved and registered a change of address with the Postal Service. Since then, he's noticed that many other more companies than he ever notified before are mailing letters to his new address. Is that typical, Michelle?
It depends on the way that the company mailed the letter, typically, as I understand it, because if they ask for forwarding information, they'll get it back from the Postal Service and know that you moved. I mean, this person emailed and asked, what is it that the Postal Service actually shares? I'm sure the Postal Service website indicates, but they typically don't collect more than name and address information. So you do want to watch that. And when you move, you get a letter at your old address and your new address. So you want to pay attention to when you get mailers from the Postal Service, because someone may have changed your address for you, even though you've never moved. And that's a tip-off to identity theft that you need to be vigilant of.
Robert emailed us and said, I'd like to share a method that worked for me to avoid giving my Social Security number on a utility account and an internet service provider. When I applied for a new account over the phone, they asked for it. I said that in lieu of giving my number, Social Security number, I'd be willing to prepay 6 or 12 months to build credit. And it worked. And they said, well, if you're willing to pay us 6 months ahead of time or 12 months ahead of time, that's okay. Of course, not all of us can reach into the old bank account and come up with 6 or 12 months. But if that worked and you're in a position to be able to do that, why not?
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe another tip is offer to show them your credit report that you just ran within the last X number of days, weeks, or month, because sometimes that works in the housing. I don't have to pay for you to run a credit report if I supply you with one I just ran. So barter.
Barter, why not? That's great information. Thanks, Robert. Appreciate your call. And Michelle and Sandy, thank you so much. It's always... kind of sad sometimes, the stories we hear, but I think you did a lot of good today. I think there was a lot of good information out there, and Appreciate having you with us, and we'll look forward to your next visit.
Okay. Thanks, Larry. Thanks.
Thank you so much. Michelle Reinen and Sandy Chalmers, our guests from the Department of Agriculture, Trade and Consumer Protection. They'll be back in about a month, and we'll do this all over with them. Tomorrow, Diana Alfeth, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Pierce County, joins us. Some great early season gardening advice. So I'm looking forward to that. I hope you are, too. In the meantime, thanks for listening and stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.